Hey, fellow traveler, welcome to the Third Eye Awakening podcast, a show where we talk all about spiritual and psychic awakening, magic, the shift from 3D to 5D, starseeds, ascension, multiple timelines, multiple dimensions, the universe, the multiverse, the Akashic records, all the good things. I am your host, Amy Blair, and I'm so glad to have you here with me today. Okay, let's do this. Hey, my beautiful friends. Before we get into this week's episode of Third Eye Awakening, I want to take a moment to talk to you about Into the Akasha and Deeper Into the Akasha, which has been on sale over the weekend for Black Friday and Cyber Monday. And I want to let you know that I'm so excited about all of the souls who have joined so far that I am leaving it on sale for the rest of the week until end of day Friday, like I guess midnight Eastern time on Friday, December 2nd. So you have a handful more days to get in on this if it's calling to you. And I had meant to record this intro for last week's podcast before the Black Friday sale, but I was not organized enough to do so. So here I am now. The reason that I want to talk to you about it is because just before it went on sale, I was feeling like, I don't know, something, there was just, I was like feeling excited about it, but also something felt a little off. And it took me quite a while to figure out what it was. But ultimately, what I realized is that I love this program so much, A, and B, I love all of you so much that it felt kind of strange to me to just sell, you know, the pre-recorded program as is, even though I believe in it 100%, like so much. It is such a good program. But in case you haven't noticed, I'm kind of somebody that just loves to do things live. I love to get the chance to see your faces or see your names on the Zoom screen if your camera's off, hear your voices, see you in the chat, just feel your presence and your energy and interact with you. So for that reason, I have decided to add 3 new live modules to Into the Akasha, which is open to everybody who has ever signed up. So if you've signed up in the past, or if you've signed up with this Black Friday sale, either way, it is open to all of you. I hope that some of you are able to come. They will be recorded in January, but it's also to go really deeper into an area of accessing the Akashic records that I had not come to understand at the time that I recorded Into the Akasha. So I really want to share with you my new understandings and talk about it in some depth. And I want to feel your energy there. I want to do it as a live thing. So if that appeals to you and you're like, oh, first of all, I want to read the Akashic Records. Second of all, I want to like hang out with Amy and hear her talk about, you know, the new things that have come through, some of her new understandings, then please join me in Into the Akasha while it's on this beautiful 50% off discount. Okay, so there's that. But also, one of the things, as I was feeling into it and feeling like, is that like I said, I was just so excited to put this on sale, but it felt a little hollow on its own, I guess. And so one of the other things that I've decided to create and that I'm inviting you into is something that I'm calling Deeper Into the Akasha. And this is a 12-week supported group kind of Akashic mentorship experience wherein we will be having 2 calls a month. So one of them, they'll both be about 2-hour long calls. The first one will be about like, we'll be doing group practice together where we get to actually practice accessing the Akashic records together. And then the second call will probably be a mix of practice and Q&A, conversation, that kind of thing. So that's 6 2-hour long calls over a period of 12 weeks, and plus we'll have a private community of safe souls with whom you can practice your Akashic skills. Because I know that when we're learning how to read the Akashic records or, you know, do anything of that nature, like basically acquire a new skill in the realm of psychic development, it's hard to take it beyond a certain point on our own, in isolation, in private. There's a point where we really do have to start practice reading with each other. Because even though, I mean, the way I started was I started doing readings on myself, and I recommend that to everybody, to start doing readings on yourself. And I would, you know, write down the question in advance, and then I would go into the Akashic records, and then I would write down whatever information I got through my Akashic session. And that was extremely, extremely valuable. But I'll tell you what, the point where my ability to read the Akashic records really started to exponentially grow, really, really started to blossom, was when I went out on a limb and started reading for other people. And before, like when I first started reading for other people, it was in the capacity of joining some large Facebook groups, kind of like Soul Space, but I think they were bigger, and just kind of putting it out there. Or like, I mean, they were the kind of groups where people would ask questions, like they were kind of fishing for psychic readings. And I would offer psychic readings, like just little mini ones, Akashic psychic readings, and I would get really good feedback. But also what I noticed was I started getting blown up. Like I got people coming in my message box unsolicited, and people just like grabbing at my energy, trying to get me to, you know, like fix their problems basically. And a lot of people in a really disempowered state who just wanted to hear that the person they're obsessed with is their twin flame or some shit. You know what I mean? Like it was very, I didn't have good, strong psychic defenses up, and I just kind of walked into like a minefield of people's hunger for answers. And it was stressful to navigate, particularly since I was also in a grieving and mourning period myself. And then quite a while later, like I think like a year later, year and a half later, I saw that somebody who I trusted, whose programs I had joined in the past, was creating a like psychic development program. And I joined her program, and within the container of that group, so only the people who had joined the group, I was able to really start practicing my Akashic reading skills from a place of safety, because all of those people, like we had a similar understanding. We had all paid to be there. We all, you know, we were all practicing. Like there was an element of safety and security that made all the difference. And my confidence really grew, and the depth of my readings really grew. And so that's what I want to create with Deeper Into the Akasha. It's not a psychic development program, although obviously that will be part of it, because that is how the Akashic information comes through. But it's specifically about applying what we've learned in terms of accessing the Akashic records. So Into the Akasha is theory. It's all the informational portion of reading the Akashic records. And Deeper Into the Akasha is the application. It is the guidance. It is the support. It is the mentorship. It is the community. It is like basically how you put it into practice so that it becomes a skill that you actually have access to and you can actually do. And I'm telling you, there are a lot of subtleties and nuances to going into the Akashic field and, you know, gaining information and then translating it. And there's always the piece about self-doubt. So one of my favorite soul sisters, Heather Thomas, whom some of you have had Akashic readings with, she did Into the Akasha in that February round. So you'll hear her beautiful voice in some of the recordings. And I was so impressed with Heather because she, like, by the end of Into the Akasha, she just went for it. She just, like, she took it seriously. She practiced daily. She would get information. She would just practice going into the Akashic field. And she started doing readings for people. And it was so beautiful. But we were also working together in a private mentorship capacity at that point. And a lot of her questions started to be about, like, you know, like, she just wanted somebody to talk with about the information she was getting in the Akashic records, because she was getting good, clear information, but there's still always that self-doubt piece. And sometimes you just need to run it by somebody that you trust and feel like, oh, okay, yeah, okay. Or, you know, get another, like, it's like a second opinion, so to speak. And I really believe that it was a combination of Heather's, you know, total empowered decision to actually put it into application and practice reading the Akashic records, plus her willingness to ask me questions about it and use her mentorship, her private mentorship, and then she later joined the Akashic apprenticeship, and use that space to really, like, share what she was getting in the Akashic records, if just to share the profound wisdom that she was connecting with, or to ask questions about it, to get clarity, to just, you know, get validation or reinforcement, or to be open to critique. Mostly it was just validation. She's brilliant. Anyway, and so she's kind of my case study that inspired me to create this program in deeper into the Akasha. So again, it's 12 weeks. It is 2 calls per month. And they, each call will be about 2 hours long, and they are centered around practice. And then there's, because it's a closed container, there is, you know, ample room for practicing in between the calls. But on those calls, you get, you know, my presence, my guidance, my way in, etc. And yeah, I'm really excited about it. So for the Black Friday Cyber Monday sale that is extending through the rest of the week until midnight on Friday, December 2nd, midnight Eastern, this is Deeper Into the Akasha is available at a third of the investment, a third of the investment. Okay. So it's going to be open for enrollment all the way through December. It's also starting in January, I'm pretty sure. All of a sudden, I'm like kind of remembering and doubting myself, but I'm recording this on my phone and the information is on my phone, so I can't confirm, but I'm pretty sure it's starting in January. Anyway, all the way through until it starts, it is going to continue to be on sale. So it's not like, you know, you can't get into it after December 2nd, but up until December 2nd is the lowest price it will ever be. It's literally a third of the total cost. So come on in. I'm really excited to meet you. I'm really excited to work with you. I am really excited to hold you and support you and watch you step into your beautiful, powerful gifts that you can then use to access clarity and wisdom and confidence for yourself and for others. The potential in the Akashic field is truly infinite, and I'm so excited to share it with you. All right, that's it. Let's get on with the episode.
Hi, everyone. Welcome to another episode of Third Eye Awakening. Today, I have with me the beautiful Dagmar Gomez, who is going to share with us a lot of her experiences as a breathwork, meditation, inner work, and mindset mentor. She works with women and is just very, I can feel already in her energy that she holds a very high level of consciousness and, like, creatorship, bringing her clients into a state of being centered in their own power. And just before we hit record, we were just chatting, and there are so many amazing things that we're going to be talking about today. So I'm really excited for this conversation. Welcome, Dagmar. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thank you for having me, Amy. I am so excited. I'm so excited for this conversation.
So will you tell us a little bit about yourself, where you are, what you do, and give us a backstory as to how you came into your spiritual awakening, or how you got to be on this path where you understand the world through the lens of things like breath work, mindset, meditation, et cetera.
Absolutely. So I actually have had two spiritual awakenings. I didn't know that was a thing. I didn't know you could have two. So I had my first one in 2000. I had just graduated from university a couple of years before that. And I started regular, in air quotes, regular job. And I met a girl who told me about a breathwork and meditation workshop that she was holding. So I ended up taking that. And my fiance at the time, who's now my husband, took it with me. And that really began my first spiritual awakening. So it was 4 to 5 days of breathwork and meditation. And I knew I was meant to be there. When I'm not accustomed to seeing auras, it's not anything that I've seen before in my life. And the teacher came in, and it almost looked like she floated in, and she just had this beautiful aura of light around her head. So I knew I was to pay attention. So I did. And that really began my first spiritual awakening. Within a few months, my husband and I went to the ashram. We met, there was a guru that was part of that organization, that led that organization. And I dove in deep. And I became a teacher of breathwork and meditation. And I continued that for many years, but at the same time, I had my regular career. So I was teaching. It's like I was living this double life. And I feel like that is actually the reason why I was able to keep up with my regular work for my job for so long, because I had the breathwork and the meditation in the background. But my husband and I, we both became extremely hidden. We kept it extremely hidden. We kept it hidden for fear of judgment, for fear of being misunderstood. It was also the type of clients, because we had a private practice consulting and implementing software. And the type of clients that we had, we felt like it's not like necessarily anything we talked about. We just knew that it was to be hidden in order for us to be safe, and also for our children to be able to have the, no, you understand. It's for our children to be able to have the kind of, to have friends, to be quote unquote normal. Okay. And then I eventually left the organization that I was working with, that I was teaching for, but I kept up with the practice. And my husband and I both did. And then what happened was it was 2 years ago in 2022, when everything happened, that we were home. We were homebound, like many other people, like most people, we were homebound. The five of us, all of a sudden, so I have three sons and my husband and I, we were homebound in the country. Our home is in the country, about 45 minutes on the other side of the mountains from Honolulu. And it was a really nice time in the sense that we were home and the rat race had stopped. The world had stopped. I never thought that it could stop in the way that it did. And the islands just became really quiet. Okay. And I was so grateful for our home. And although I homeschool my children, my three boys, they play tennis at a competitive level. So we were gone all the time. So when this happened, we were home. So it allowed me the time to, it gave me the space and the time to meditate a lot. So I started meditating. And what I was surprised to discover was that every day when I sat down in meditation, the same message came through. And I did not know I had the ability to channel, or that I've never experienced anything like this before. But what the message that came through every single day was, teach women, focus on women, focus on moms, create a shorter breathwork practice for them. The breathwork practice that I was to create for the women and the moms was a 5 to 7 minute breathwork practice, as opposed to the traditional 20-minute practice that is taught in many yogic traditions. So that was really the beginning of the journey.
That's amazing. And as a mom, I'm like, my heart is swinging right now. Like a shorter breathwork practice, exactly. Not that I can't speak for all people, but I don't want to take shortcuts. But the reality is that when you're being the mom, you're tending to your chicks in your nest, and your partner bird in your nest, it does not afford a lot of time to sit down. And I really prize my, some days it's 5 minutes. Some days it's nothing at all. Some days it's 5 minutes on the couch while my son is crawling around and he's just woken up. So he's in a good mood and just wants to shoot around and play with things. And it's not even a real, it doesn't even feel like a real meditation because part of my mom brain is aware of him. But nonetheless, it has the effect of centering me. So I just think that shorter breath.
I know. So I want to tell you something about that, because one thing I discovered, because initially I was questioning it, but then every single day that same message would come through and I trusted the message and I created the practice. And then I tested it on myself. I tested it on my girlfriends. I put up posters in the neighborhood and people started coming and I started teaching them. And just, I wanted to make sure that it was quote unquote sound. Did it work? Is there benefit to it? And it definitely was. But the story that I want to share with you is that it wasn't until I knew there was value to it, but I ended up receiving a different validation. And that's what I want to share with you is that during my training, I learned that the reason for 20 minutes, the reason that practices traditionally are created to be 20 minutes is because when the TM organization did research, what they discovered was that anything longer than 20 minutes did not have any added benefit. So it's not, do you see what I mean? So it's not that, but somehow we flipped it around and we think that 5 to 7 to 10 minutes is not valid because we've been taught, it's been drilled into our heads that it's this 20 minutes, 20 minutes, 20 minutes, once a day, twice a day. But that is just simply not true. And the story that I want to share with you is, it was probably a year after I had created the practice, the shorter practice, and I was already teaching it, that I was scrolling through my phone and I had received an email. And it was an article talking about how the TM organization was recommending that. And I'm not a part of the TM organization, but I just thought this was so cool because what they were talking about how is that if you do not have time to do a 20-minute practice, do a 10-minute practice. And I remember, and they have the funds to do the research, to do the meditation research that I obviously don't. And I just thought that was so cool. That was just that extra validation that perhaps I needed.
And I think that we all, like, that's a super huge relief to me to just be like, and it confirmed something I knew inwardly, because in the absence of children, like at different points when I did have ample time to meditate, I would find that I will time out at about 22, 23 minutes just naturally. That's when my beta brain would come back, but I felt really good. And so I didn't really argue it. I felt, okay, even if the meditation was 30 minutes long or 45 minutes long, I would just let it play out in my earbuds, but get up and make my tea or whatever, carry on with my day. And it's the same with naps. When I'm having a nap, I'll tend to sleep for 20 minutes. And then I'll wake up. And if I dare go back to sleep again, I start having really weird dreams. It's my brain is like, right here, get up and carry on with life. I love it. So I'd love to hear more about breath work and what, like a longer version of how it transformed you and what you experienced when you started on your breath work journey. Because as I was sharing with you before we hit record, I know, it's very clear. My next set of instructions are to bring in a breathwork practice, to bring in a movement practice like Qigong. And what was the other one? There was one more. I don't remember what it is off the top of my head now. Regardless, I know, toning and throat chakra activation. I'm very interested in breathwork because I've been getting this message for months now. And I'm just like gearing up to have the time and the space to be able to embark on it.
How cool. So originally I wanted to meditate. So I sat down to meditate and I had trouble meditating. So that is how I found my way to breathwork, because breathwork is the vehicle. And I feel like breathwork is the coolest and most amazing and quickest hack into a meditative state, because it brings you into a meditative state very quickly. That, I don't know what else to say about it. I feel like it's just so magical. It's sacred knowledge. It's simple. It's not difficult to learn. And it's been around for thousands of years. It's just been kept very, for a long time, it was kept very quiet in India. And when there's stories of gurus who wanted to come to North America, and the devotees in India said, no, if the people want to learn, let them come here. You don't need to travel, because they loved their gurus, their teachers so dearly. But the guru said, no, we need to go. North America needs the knowledge. And so they came to North America and they taught and we learned. I don't know what else to say about it. It's so dear and near to my heart. I get on my mat every single day and I do it. And within a matter of minutes, I'm in a meditative state. And that's the state from which I move every single day. And it's this beautiful, joyful, peaceful, serene state that allows me to show up in devotion every single day. I show up in devotion for my business, for myself, for the women that I serve, for my family. And it allows me this inner peace where, if you can picture it, my studio, my office space is where I'm sitting right now. It's on the back lanai of my house, but I have three boys, active boys, that I homeschool. But this practice allows me to just set up a very calm environment for my family where I float back and forth, where they're doing their schooling and I'm working, and I support them, and I work on my business and I support that as well. And it just allows for balance. It just allows for balance.
What it sounds like you're describing is that it's a very easy and powerful and like continually all the time accessible to all people, regardless of their circumstances, hack or method to come deeply into our center, which is where, like, that's where we access flow. That's where we access the zero point field.
Yes.
And I've noticed, I started doing some, I've literally never taken a breathwork class, but when I recently hosted a Galactic Gateway Masterclass, and part two was like a process to, it came with a meditation, and then I took everybody who attended through a guided multidimensional holographic matrix repatterning session, which it's just, I don't know, clearing out their whole energy field to open their galactic gateway. And I was told by my guides that I needed to incorporate breath work. And I was like, I've never taken a breath work class. I can't do this. Cool. Like, you breathe every day. You can do this. It's just about being mindful and intentional about your breathing. So I just stilled myself and asked what kind of breathing. And they just said simple cyclical breaths. That's all. Just like really taking as much oxygen as you can. And then without pausing, like letting it all out and just take a small number of breaths. And I noticed that it had the very quickly, if I went above four cyclical breaths, it very much resembled the effect that I get on a small amount of like cannabis or psilocybin. Like, it was very expansive without having to take any plant medicine. And also what I thought was so amazing about it is that, like, we all, if we're alive, that means we have lungs and we breathe, and there is no barrier to accessing the expansive experience that comes from breathing mindfully.
And I feel like I feel like the women that I'm called to work with are the women who are just beginning to awaken. And perhaps not as used to working with the more like subtle energies, which I feel like you work more with. So I feel like this is just so much easier for people to get. And what's amazing, so I just taught on Thursday night on the full moon. And what I love about teaching breathwork so much is that as I sit there across from these women, I have this, as I sit in this seat of service and I have this privilege to see them, within a matter of minutes, breathwork just transforms them. It is just, it's mind blowing. It's so cool. It's so cool. Yeah, it is a hack.
That's so beautiful. I am even more inspired now to like really step into it and start integrating it into my daily practice. No, who am I kidding? It'll be like every 3 days I'll be able to do it. Being totally real. But I would also love to talk to you about the women you serve and the downloads that you got and just expanding on that, on the guidance that you received. And maybe you can also share, again, before we hit record, you were telling me that the Priestess Transmission, like you got the book and you read it and you felt very validated. And you shared with me when you reached out about the podcast, like that you had been led to incorporate hibiscus. And like there were some very even specific nations overlap of the downloads we've been receiving.
As I said, so in 2020, when I started receiving the messages, I was scared, but I decided to trust them. And it's so funny because I went from, how can I do this? I went from that to now, I could not imagine myself doing anything else. But it took a lot of trust. It's so funny. I literally got a download for the type of domain name I should be purchasing. Go ahead and order business cards. And I just continued to, every day I did my breathwork practice and I just continued to just listen to my intuition and lead with that. And sorry, I lost my train of thought. Can you ask me the question again? I found it again. So really it was, what I appreciated about your book was that what it did was it validated everything for me. So as I started having workshops in my home, I just felt so deeply drawn to, I can't even explain it to you, Amy. It was, I need to have hibiscus. And I'm like, okay, I'm going to go pick hibiscus because there's hibiscus on my tree. I have hibiscus bushes that grow on my property and everything. And it was crazy. That's why I really appreciated your book, because it was like, I would go to my cushion to meditate and I know that my children are waiting for me. And I'm like, no, I need a hibiscus and I need to put it on the altar before I start meditating. I'm like, really? Do I really need a hibiscus? Yes, you need a hibiscus. Okay, I'll go get the hibiscus. I'd get up, I'd go get the hibiscus and I bring it back and then I would meditate. So it was a lot of that. And then really having to incorporate that and then really feeling like today I need to go and purchase rose water. And then it was, I need to drink the rose water. And I have 3 sons and a husband and they're looking at me like, what are you drinking? Are those roses? And then I would have wild roses that I had to have in the drink. I was drinking milk with roses in it with rose water. And they're just looking at, I'm like, I can't even explain because I don't understand, but I just trusted. And I had to, and all my skincare line, I had to switch it to roses. It had to be roses. So I was looking for finding a clean line, because usually I don't want to put on my face what I wouldn't eat. So I tried to, so finding and just feeling like I really needed to do that and spritzing myself with rose water. And then I was deeply drawn to start using rose oil. So this is a beautiful story. I felt like I had, the more I meditated, the more I connected, I realized I had a blocked heart chakra. I felt like a deep betrayal from a family member. And it was just really blocking my heart chakra. And I could feel this heaviness. And I was just called to use rose oil on my heart chakra every single day. And it healed it. And that is my message for anyone who's suffering from a broken heart, from a betrayal, whether that's from whatever kind, whatever, whether there's so many sources that could come from, but it healed it. And I'm so grateful to the rose for, and its high vibration for that. So then I started using it on my clients. And then I was called to put my hands in specific positions on my clients to deliver the healing. And I would do that. I would follow the intuition. And then later I would Google it and realize that there was actually a significance for it. And then I felt like the biggest, as I said, in the final validation was when I started finding the same transmission in your book. And I remember also about a year ago, I had a vision of myself. I've never seen anything like this before, but I was walking on white marble stairs. It was like thousands of years ago. I was walking up to a temple and I dressed in a white dress similar to the one of you in the picture in the book. And really, that's what drew me to you and to the book, was not the cover of the book, but was the picture of you. And walking up to the temple, and I knew that I was going to teach women. So I trusted in that and know that I've done it before. But then having your book and the transmissions from within the book just really, it was just deeply validating that I meant to do this work and that I'm on the right path and that I'm not crazy for leaving such a lucrative career.
And it's so immensely validating just to hear this from you as well. It has the same effect on me where I'm like, this is what I saw when I was receiving those transmissions, and even more recently as well. But like, I remember receiving them and being like, at the time, I didn't even feel like a priestess. So it felt so strange. Like, I'm not somebody who has walked along priestess path or a path of devotion to the goddess, or I worked as a midwife. So obviously I love women, but I wasn't mindfully spiritually on that kind of path or perceiving myself in that way. So it was very uncomfortable to receive those transmissions. But I also, the part of me that was able to receive them also knew that like I was not the only one. I just had to articulate the things that were coming through to me. And so it's so deeply gratifying and confirming to speak to you and be like, yes, like you were the invisible, like the women I couldn't see. We weren't in each other's world yet, but I knew that the information was being pulled through like for you. Yeah, it's just beautiful. And also right now I'm getting visions that are, again, it's a big stretch. What it feels like is we have actual superpowers. So I thought of this as you were talking about placing your hand, being guided to place your hand on particular parts of your clients, like over certain parts of their body. And I'm getting these visions of being able to put our hands on people and transmit like healing frequencies in way more, I don't know, like much more potently than we previously could, but also that we could do things like, gonna sound nuts, parting water, conjuring up like balls of energy in our hands, fireballs between our hands, being able to like call the weather and direct it. And
oh my gosh, that's amazing. Yeah, I love that so much. I love that so much. Okay. So after reading your book, I felt like I was further activated. And so I started working on people recently. I've been called to just start, because what's interesting is I felt like at first I thought, let me go get some training, but I don't feel I need the training. I know I'm ready and the book confirms that I can just start. But so I was going back and forth dealing with a little bit of imposter syndrome where, well, can I just start putting my hands on people and working on people without a piece of paper? No, let me. And I reached out to a friend who channels, and she's, no, you can just, she confirmed for me that I could just start. But then still I messaged this girl for like energy healing Reiki training, but she never responded, which is really weird because she should have. So I'm like, I'm just going to start. So I started this past week, and the feedback I'm getting back is amazing. People who are used to getting body work and healing work done for years, and they're coming to me saying, this is without a doubt the best body work I've ever received. And I think that's just so cool. So cool. And what you're saying about images of being able to just part water and move water. So I ended up taking like a 6-day online healing with your hands course. And one of the activations, as I'm on, like, I was doubling up. I said, I'm going to have a bath while I listen to this. So I did it in the tub with water, and the energy within the water, Amy, was so much more intense. There was so much It's like the water wasn't moving, but it was moving. It was so intense that I could barely handle it.
Yeah. Exciting. And I think, honestly, I think this is the very beginning. Like, I think they're, when I say they, I don't really know whoever. I think it's just our counterparts, like the bigger aspect of our own consciousness that is mediating what we receive. They're giving us these things that are very powerful, but also they're using a lot of discretion so that they don't blow our circuits. But I feel like it's going to, no sooner do we calibrate to a level of being like, oh, okay, now I'm used to this amount of energy passing through me, then it's going to be like, all right, dial it up to the next level. Yes.
And you're absolutely right. What's coming through for you is so clear and correct, because it feels like a year ago, but it wasn't. I ramped it up 6 months ago within my business and my circuitry, it felt like it got burned. And then since then, I had to really work on recalibrating the nervous system. And since then, up-leveling or whatever the current, I'm at a loss for the correct word here, but yes. So I can thank you for saying that, because part of me is hurry up, let's go. I'm ready. And then another part of me understands and appreciates that that it needs to come at a speed, at a flow that is just a little bit more gentle, and that which I can integrate and fully embody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And I really love that you brought up the nervous system, because I think that that key is that our body on its own can handle like quite a lot of sensory input. But it's the nervous system as it relates to the stories, like the meaning we make around our experiences and the stories that we hold. It's our nervous system that really has the potential to get fried. Because, for example, if we have a story, even if it's totally unrelated to like psychic gifts at all, but we have a story that, let me think of a mundane example. Mm-hmm. Say if somebody has a story that they're irresponsible with money. And that seems to have nothing to do with psychic abilities, but they have this, whenever they spend money or they look at their bank account or whatever, they have this contraction in their nervous system and in their thought field where they're like, oh, like there's not enough in there. How am I going to pay my bills? I shouldn't have bought this thing. I'm so irresponsible. Those things are locked in our nervous system. And then when we have an influx of power of any kind, whether it's an influx of money, because money is just, it's a power. And so when money comes in, somebody has that story, then they're going to feel afraid of having a large amount of money / a large amount of power, because they believe that they're irresponsible and they're going to squander it and ruin it. And so they guard themselves around it. It's going to have the same effect when they're receiving a large amount of like psychic power or consciousness power. Their nervous system isn't going to be able to distinguish the different, and they'll contract around it. So it is that nervous system work of like really letting it know that it's safe to expand. We don't have to protect ourselves from the past anymore.
That is so beautiful. I needed to hear that. I really needed to hear that message. Yeah. I'm just letting that land for a minute. Yeah. No, that's, yeah. On point. Mm-hmm. It landed.
Also, I really appreciate what you were saying too about the rose oil healing your heart. And I want to offer a similar story to further validate it, and just also to validate anybody who's listening who's had an experience like that, or anybody who feels like healing has to be hard, because it doesn't. And there are so many, like, frequencies make such a big difference to us. And so when I was healing in that first, I guess it would have been 5 months after Killian passed away, I was led to this like crystal store in my area. It was really weird. Like, the woman lived in the middle of nowhere and she just had this crystal showroom at her house. It was really interesting, but she had beautiful specimens. And I was led to go there and I saw this piece of calcite and it was just under 2 pounds, and it was a piece of green calcite. And I knew I had to buy it. And luckily, calcite is not an overly expensive mineral because I was super broke. But I bought it. And when I would go to sleep at night, I got this, this directive, this impulse. It felt like an impulse to put it on my heart, like in between my breasts while I was lying on my back and falling asleep. And I would do that every night. And I would sleep with it until I was compelled to roll over. And then I would put it either under my pillow or on my bedside table. But that healed my heart tremendously. That green calcite, just simply doing that, just simply putting it on my body, it did a massive amount of healing. And so when you were talking about the rose oil, I was like, yeah, that's literally as easy as it gets to be, especially right now that we're just, the way I understand it is, it's like the rose oil carries a frequency that expresses itself in a geometric pattern very similar to cymatics. And that frequency is a very close vibrational match to the organic baseline frequency of our heart.
Oh, wow.
And so when you apply it, it helps to pattern the density of the heart wall that we contain around it. So that it's almost like a tuning fork, even though it's not making any sound, it still carries a frequency pattern. So it's like a tuning fork that you have near your heart, which allows your heart chakra to retune itself.
So is there a specific oil that corresponds to the other chakras or to the other portals?
Yeah, there are lots of them. The ones that I feel really makes sense to me are, so for the root chakra, I can never, patchouli just feels like such a root chakra oil to me. It's so earthy. It's so grounded, but it could also be like cedarwood. No, just something that really has that earthy, I don't know, it's like a low note, if that makes sense. And then go ahead.
Oh, no, for me, I've always been drawn to use On Guard on my root chakra. I don't know, but
we have clove, which is another, like, yeah. Clove, cinnamon, those like lower, I don't know how to describe, I don't know if that makes sense.
Lower. It does. I understand what you mean. It's just because it's also the root chakra is very grounding, and that oil compared to me, I feel like a rose oil just, it sings. The rose oil sings. It vibrates compared to, yes, I feel something like clove, or it just has a lower tone. That's what I wanted to say. It has a lower tone versus like a higher vibrating tone.
Totally. Exactly. It's like a bass note that will, and it even when you're combining oils, I even find the same thing. Clove really supports those other oils in the On Guard mix. So they hit higher and they depart faster, and you're left with the clove that lingers, if that makes sense.
Thank you for that. Yes, that totally makes sense. I love that.
And for the sacral, I really think that it's as simple as tangerine or wild orange or even like sandalwood. Even patchouli could also be a sacral chakra one too. And then for the solar plexus, I feel like lemon, lime, fennel, those ones, for me, they just make sense for that chakra. For the heart, it definitely feels rose. For the throat, it feels something like Roman chamomile or maybe tansy. And for the third eye, for some reason, this one is the biggest stumper for me at this moment. What is the third eye one? Lavender. Duh.
That feels beautiful.
And then the crown to me is frankincense.
Oh, yeah. What's interesting, too, is that at night, the oils that I put on my face with a carrier oil, that's what I use as my moisturizer, is the lavender and the frankincense. There you go. And I've been doing that for years.
Yeah, that's so funny. It is so funny. It's like we carry this knowledge, but it's just buried in our subconscious. So we don't necessarily, and then we don't even think to credit it or discredit it. We're just, it's just something that we're doing. We just don't really think twice about it. I think it's the same with our psychic abilities that we, they're just there.
Yes.
And we're using them to some degree or another. And for most of us, we just don't even really notice. So we don't, like when I'm describing claircognizance, for example, because that's my cheap one, is just a knowing. Just like information just drops in through my crown and I'm like, oh, now I know something. And I can talk about it because I know it. But for, I think for people who are claircognizant, it just feels like yourself. So you don't even necessarily acknowledge it.
Yes. It's been an interesting journey for me to be a mother.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. Because it's one thing to lead yourself and to make decisions for yourself. It's a whole different ball of wax when you're doing it for three other humans and you're doing it in a partnership with somebody else. And I've always had that deep knowing, but I didn't know it. I didn't know I had the deep knowing. And it was such a journey of just trusting and trying to be normal and then quote unquote normal. And then just realizing that it just didn't fit. It didn't fit. I wanted to fall in line and I just couldn't. Whether it was like, I never thought that we were going to be the almost every single rule. It's not whether it was home birth or whether it was even with the, like my first son was an emergency C-section in the hospital and all of the medical interventions that wanted to be done and just feeling like I was just constantly fighting against the system every single time. And then my next two births were home births and then homeschooling and then dealing with refusing all of the recommended medical interventions for my kids and having to navigate all of that with, because even though I homeschool my kids, they also go to, it's like a hybrid program where we sometimes partner with a school. So having to navigate the bureaucracy of all of that, of
all that bureaucracy.
Oh, I tell you, that's been a lot. That's been a lot, especially over the last 1 to 2 years of just completely losing my shit to fight to protect my kids. That has been an interesting journey. And yeah.
Just even with being a homeschool parent, it feels like you're still having to protect their rights from the reaches of the system.
This is it. Yeah, because it's gross. It's your now the reaches. It's so even though we homeschool, we are under a charter school. And that I dealt with that a long time ago because it was just filing one set of paperwork, finding a naturopathic doctor to support our choice, submitting everything, having the guts to do it, but hey, I will tell you something cool about that. Is that years ago when I was submitting it, I was nervous to be going out on a ledge, as you call it, going out on a ledge that it felt like for me in a culture that maybe doesn't do that, because I feel like where we live here, people just, it's a culture of being, living with aloha, being very nice. The island's very small. Everybody knows each other. And sometimes it's difficult to go against the grain. Anyhow, but I did. And because there's no choice So you do it. But what's interesting is that you don't get any feedback from the people you're submitting the paperwork to. But it's so cool a few years later when that same admin has children of her own and she's whispering to you asking who your healthcare provider was so that they could provide her with the same paperwork. So like you said in your book, we go first and just to go first and trust what you're being led to do. But yeah, no, my children play tennis at a varsity level. So it was important for me to find a tennis team for them at a school. So that's how the school system entered into our picture, is that that's how we got drawn in, sucked into the whole thing, was and having to fight the system to keep them from being poked and all the paperwork that, oh my gosh, I felt like I was said I was in a some kind of a, sounds silly, but it's like I was in a legal battle. Legal mm-hmm. battle where I was putting together a legal case to support our position. And then when I felt like I had, it sounds dramatic, but I just felt like I had nothing left to give. I felt like this was so important to me because they want to play, especially my middle son wants to play tennis at a college level. So this is serious for us. This is a big deal to him. So I had to give it, I felt like I had to give it my all. So it took me a week to put all the research together, the paperwork, I submitted it all. I thought I was done. And then I didn't realize that there was actually a phone interview. It would be a surprise phone interview where you had to further answer a line of questioning while the woman was typing like really fast and really loud. It just was mondo bizarro. It was something out of some kind of a weird movie. It just did not feel real at all. And I had to support my case and I just absolutely and utterly lost it. I absolutely just lost it. And everything within me just came unleashed and it was amazing. And I thought, oh my gosh, I'm going to mess this up for my kids. And we did it. Everything was fine. And I could hear her actually gasping on the other end because I think she ended up receiving. And I knew what I was doing. I was moving with awareness. I was showing a lot of anger. I was showing, I think, more anger than I was feeling, but I felt it was important for her to understand her role, what it is that she was doing to families, and for her to take responsibility for that, and for her to also get the other side, because I don't think she's gotten it from a lot of parents. Yeah.
That righteous anger is so important, that line that we draw in the sand, that line that we're like, no, for my own integrity, like this line does not get crossed. This is where I stand and I'm planting my flag, as it were, and I'm making it known and I'm not backing down. I feel like that has so much to do with this rise of the divine feminine energy. It's like the divine feminine has the beautiful, soft, graceful, nurturing aspect to it, but it also has the fury and the Kalima and the like this fierce, I don't know. I always think of wild animals, wild mammals that are mamas. Mm-hmm. We'll just like,
absolutely,
you know, rip you to shreds. They
will. Absolute. And that's how I felt.
Survive.
Yeah. And that's how that's what I feel like the last year has in a way been. It's just this mama bear protecting her cubs and even in a way from themselves, because my teenagers, they have really been questioning my decision. But they've really been questioning my decision, and they're big and they're strong. They weigh more than me. My middle son towers over me and they're questioning my decision because why can't we just be like everybody else? Why can't we go and have this done so we don't have to get tested twice a week? Why can't we go and have this done so we can just go to the movies with our friends? These are the reasons. These are the reasons.
And that's so hard. I'm really lucky. My oldest is 17 and when he was a kid, he would lose his mind if he had like a gash or something or a skinned knee and I tried to put peroxide and polysporin on it. Like he just has this natural aversion to medication. He always has very interesting. And so that kind of, he was like, I don't want to get a jab. And he was in agreement with me, which I'm extremely thankful for. But like to stand firm in that decision, have your own children see it from the perspective, which I imagine a lot of them do, where they're like, this stupid little thing that I can get over with in 5 minutes is a barrier to me being able to participate at the level that I want to. And also my peer group is looking at me like I'm a weirdo and wondering like why my mom is all crazy and whatnot. Yeah, to stand firm in that is really powerful. What did you tell them? What reasons did you give that helped them to understand where you were coming from?
For me, it's easier because we've always taken that route. Hmm. Right. So we didn't. My first son was born a preemie. And I did give him when he was a little bit bigger, but not that much bigger. I started him when he was, I think, 3 months old. And he had a really bad reaction to his first two rounds of shots. So we stopped and we haven't since then. So that was that part. In a sense, we were just following suit. We were just following suit. It's just not something we do as a family. And then the other reason that we gave them was we just don't know enough. We just don't know enough. And that's something that my husband was able to get on board with. Mm. That was something that he was able to get on board with and support. And he was reluctantly supporting me. But what's tough is that within our extended family, they're not taking that route. And it's actually on the other extreme where they were choosing who they would associate with or not associate with based on that choice, which was mind blowing for me.
So. It's so hard. It's frustrating to see the way that the effect that has had on families, on friendships. I experience it myself. It's frustrating because when you can see that is the end goal, it's like you just want to take people and be like, this is what they want us to do. Like they want to divide us.
What's crazy, I will tell you, this is what inspires me about my work. Okay. I have a client who the first day she showed up for a one-on-one session, this was about a year ago. I don't remember the exact timeline. I'm having trouble with timelines right now. But as she came up my back steps, she said, and I wasn't wearing a mask. I just looked like this. And she came up my steps and she said, sorry, I forgot to bring a mask. And I thought, good. And she said, don't worry, I'm vaccinated. And I didn't say anything. And that made her feel safe. And we never, ever discussed anything about that at all within our work. We just did the breath work. We did the meditation. We did inner work, mindset work. And she began to awaken. And it was such a beautiful process to witness. And I remember I think it was our last session, she said, I was coerced into, and I was scared into agreeing to that. To being jabbed. And I agreed to it reluctantly. And she said, even though I knew that was not the right decision for me. And she said, I will never betray myself like that again. And that gives me hope. Having that story from her gives me hope that I feel like people are waking up. And albeit maybe some a little after the fact, but I hope that people are starting to wake up. Because I have heard other people say to me, I don't get it. And anyway, I have so many stories about that where it's not effective and people are realizing it and they feel betrayed and they don't know what to do with that information. So they're angry about it and then they get defensive.
Yeah, totally. And I think this might sound a little bit Pollyanna, but it doesn't feel Pollyanna internally as I process it. But I believe that everything that we experience is both, how do I put it, like good, bad, for us, against us. I don't know. Those are too limited, those descriptions, but you get the gist. So yeah. Everything we experience can be for our enhancement or our detriment, but we're the ones that get to choose. And that is free will in this world. We choose. So the experience, like the number of people that did get the poke because they felt like, oh, this is the best thing for me, or because they were coerced into it out of fear or any whatever number of reasons, a lot of those people will awaken because of that. And that was what was required for them. Whereas for us, we didn't need to get that. We had a different awakening catalyst, not better, not worse. We just awakened at a different point. And so it does get to be used for good. And also I've found, because I've done so many Akashic readings on people who haven't received the jab and people who have received the jab. And I think this is more of a reflection of the type of people that come into my world and want to book a reading with me or work with me at some higher level. But I have found that I'm a little hesitant to say this. I'm like, man, can this be applied universally? I don't know. I'm just going to say it. Too late.
Just say it. I want to hear it. Yeah.
I have found that I don't feel a difference in their field. I don't feel a difference. And I think, again, that's more of a reflection of the kind of people that come to work with me, that they are at a level of consciousness where I think that basically, I do believe that, this is my belief, the jam was engineered to prevent people from awakening. But the awakening is so inevitable. It's so much bigger. It's so much more powerful than any of the false matrix manipulation that we're subjected to, that it absolutely can't stop the schedule of awakening that has already been laid out. Everybody is, they will bloom in their own time, like wildflowers. Like that bud will bloom on the day that that bud blooms, and they're not able to stop it. And that when we are in our awakened state, and I'll say too, it's not just about being awakened. If you're awakened, but you're still at the place in your awakening where you feel very threatened by the agenda, and so you're operating at a frequency of a lot of fear, I'm not judging or condemning, because I had to go through that in 2020. That was like pretty much my whole year of 2020 was like, I mean, everything that got triggered in me was so much, and part of 2021. So I don't have any judgment, but I just believe that frequency of fear is what sort of activates and allows the more nefarious parts of the jab to do their thing that they were intended to do. But that when we reach the point of our awakening where we start to like actually be able to see through the illusion and draw our power back into ourselves, which I think is why breath work is probably why it's coming to the forefront for me, because it does that for people. When we're in that place where our power is centered within us, and our level of consciousness is high enough that we're not really, I don't know, we're not being tossed around on the sea as an anchorless boat anymore. We are anchored. And so the chaos can happen around us, but we are in control of our own frequency. That's when I believe that the effects of the poke become negligible. And now, I don't know, the part that makes me hesitate is, do I think that means that somebody can keep getting the jab on schedule as they keep rolling it out and still maintain their frequency? I don't think so, but I don't know, because I think it's actually about making a decision out of a place of true sovereignty, not coerced sovereignty. Sovereignty and coerced sovereignty. Yeah. So I just don't feel a big difference in people's energy fields who have had it and are at a high level of consciousness, because like I said, I believe that the awakening is inevitable. And if somebody is scheduled to awaken, their flower is scheduled to bloom, that natural force of evolution is stronger than anything that has been contrived or created by incarnated creatures that are among us, human or otherwise.
You're literally describing somebody very close to me. And it's really interesting. And for a minute there, I thought, oh my gosh, this is my main reason for coming on the call right there. Just that one message. Yeah. Yeah.
So how else do you work with women? Can you walk me through, your toolkit? I'm sure it's totally different for each individual person, but what are you guiding them towards?
So women come into, up till now, because as I said, I'm now adding the body work, the energy work. And what I'm realizing is that's actually, for some women, that will be the way that that's what they will resonate with the most. But it's either one-on-one work, which is a customized container of whatever is necessary for that person. And I also do groups. So I do groups online and in person. And then I also, it's interesting that you're talking about breath work and calling your power back in, because that's literally the program, the signature program that I created. It's called Stepping Into Your Power. So I channeled, it was like 6 hours of, I did it with a group, 4 sessions where I channeled the information through. And then I created like a self-study portal. And so that's there. And now what I'm feeling is that, so that's breath work. So breath work is number one for sure. And then the next piece, this is cool. I should talk about this, is that mantra meditation. So mantra meditation is something I teach, but I teach it from a place of empowerment. So most traditional mantra meditation courses, what they do is they will give you a mantra. As a student, you're assigned a mantra, right? Because I studied with these like very traditional lineages, Vedic lineages. But what I realized, what I discovered, what was revealed to me is that we can actually, it's so empowering. We can actually choose our own mantra. So what I do is, it's a process I created. I don't know if anybody else is doing it. It's, I work with the woman and her own unique vibration. And I take her through a process of her selecting her own mantra. And I think that's super cool. So that's something else that I offer. And then the inner work and the mindset work, it's knowledge. It's divine feminine knowledge. Things that I cannot believe that in my 4 years of studying psychology and sociology in university, that I never learned any of these things of how to move in the world as from an empowered state. Things like boundaries and triggers and really what it means to be worthy because it is our birthright.
Yeah. It sounds to me like you're initiating priestesses, like you're bringing women into contact with the goddess through the portal of their own selves. Yes. And that you're, like lifting up priestesses and reminding them that frequency is available to them.
Yes.
Yeah. So beautiful. And I'm so inspired and heartened by this feeling of, I keep seeing this network of women, and it's working in concert with the divine masculine. All of my male listeners, there is a place for you as well. But I see these women and I see us coming into our power, and I see a change in the way we move in the world, and it almost becomes like a synchronized dance, and we're almost dancing and flowing through the world and through life in a way that in and of itself repatterns and recodes the collective consciousness. And I don't mean we're grooving down the sidewalk necessarily.
I saw the women Thursday night. They floated out of my home in unison. We finished with a releasing fire burning ceremony, and there was just no words to be had after that. We all just stood in this beautiful space, and then they just floated out of my home. It was really beautiful. It's interesting that you bring up the divine masculine, because I speak about the messages that I received 2 years ago about focusing on women, but I feel that message is now almost outdated, that I am being called to work with men as well. I taught co-ed. It sounds so silly. I didn't just teach women for years. I taught who I taught. And so I was a little surprised, but not, because I so deeply identify with the role of a mother. So there's no surprise that I was called to do the work that I was. But I feel like it's now time for that to be expanded. And it's very clear for me that I am open. I'm very open to begin with, but I'm very open to working with men one-on-one. It's not clear for me yet how that will be incorporated into the group, because it's important for the women to feel safe within the group when they show up. But somehow I feel that the masculine is going to be making its way in as well.
That comes up for me too. And I also feel like for the masculine to feel safe as well, right? Because
that's a good point.
A long time that we've been pitted against each other. And the masculine is as wounded as the feminine. We just had different roles in that wounding. But you're the mother of three boys. And so you can see the way that the world wants to shape the way they perceive themselves. And a lot of those are very wounded patterns. And especially the way that nobody has been given permission to emote freely. Women have been called crazy, like we're a bunch of crazy bitches. If we have emotion.
What does the word emote mean?
Express emotion. Mm. So yeah, so women are crazy and we're hysterical and but men are they're weak. They are, if they express emotion, they're weak. I hear a lot lately of beta boys and soy boys. And I understand it's because the alpha masculine is under attack. And so it's defending itself, but no good for a certain group of men to refer to another group of men as beta boys and soy boys.
Not helpful. It's so dividing.
men are richly complex emotional beings as well. And we have different wound patterns, and they often involve each other. Like for men, they're wounded in their relationships with women. We're wounded in our relationships with men. So I do feel like there still is a requirement in certain containers for a sacred space for each, so that men can freely express without worrying about being attacked by women who carry like the anger of generations of trauma, and then vice versa.
Yeah. One thing that I know it's one thing that's down the road for me, and that I'm starting to be called to do, but my husband has to get on board, is I feel like at some point our next evolution will be that him and I are being called to counsel couple. Counsel is not the right word, but to help keep families intact by me working with the woman, him working with the husband, and then us working with the couple together to create this strong base for the family to thrive on.
I think that's so beautiful. Especially given that the family, I don't know, I don't want to sound too Puritan. The family is being undermined. And that being said, I don't believe everybody has to fit into traditional families, but definitely there's just a lot working against us, basically. There's the people are deeply wounded, intergenerational trauma, regardless of what culture or race or part of the world you originate from and has shaped your life experience. We have intergenerational trauma, and it makes it very easy to not connect to the fullest potential of a relationship. So I think that's really beautiful.
It's so simple. I feel like some of these things are just so simple. And part of my work is just really sharing with people what has worked with us as a family, because we're a really close-knit family. And that has been through a lot of intentional awareness. Through doing my breathwork practice, through my husband doing his breathwork practice. So we step into, it's what we both do first thing in the morning. So then it's how we show up and we model. And it's through doing things like choosing homeschooling so that we do have the biggest influence on our children. And not from a controlling way, but just from keeping my children out of reach of other people. And it sounds so simple. Meals together has been one, and it's just touching on what you're saying and taking it a step further. It's meals together sounds so simple. And again, it sounds so outdated. It sounds so Puritan, but it's really so beautiful, because having that space for us to connect as a family and just seeing what blossoms. It sounds so cheesy, but just having that space, because I feel like families, we don't necessarily, we're so innocent. I was thinking about this yesterday as we were getting ready for movie night, and I heard my kids giggling and my husband joking with them. And I feel like in a way, the five of us were such an innocent unit. And I feel like a lot of families are just these innocent units. And we just want to raise our kids and be happy. And just, yeah. Mm-hmm. And just to be allowed to be given the space to do so. Without division being created within that love unit, within that love bubble, within that safety bubble.
Totally. And without outside interference that is not designed for our well-being, with, of course, the acknowledgement that some units are unhealthy. And so it is helpful to have outside, like external, or I don't know, forces isn't the right word, but something like that.
Support.
Yeah, exactly. That's a good word. But that's not the kind of, it's not the kind of support that we're seeing predominantly right now. We're just seeing bureaucratic groups wanting to dictate how children are raised and how families can exist together.
One of the messages that I bring with regards to that is really empowering women to understand, to take their power back through breath work, and also to just really understand that they are the keepers of the home, that they are the protectors of the home, just like their husbands, and that they do not, maybe it's such a loaded statement to make, but I feel like we do know best. So yes, go seek advice, but then you do know best. You do know what's right for your children.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah,
absolutely.
Power. Right.
our intuition and our own discernment definitely is on the table to be reclaimed now around the caretaking of our children, 100%. I have a question for you. We're winding down on our time and I want to let you go carry on with your day. But as we're talking, I'm so curious. Do you relate to being a starseed or feeling like you have any off-earth soul lineage or experience?
I do. I just don't know what to do with that information. This is all in a way so new to me, but it just resonates with me like nothing else. And I get emotional just thinking about it because
You feel like you know where you're from?
I don't. I just know that the idea that I am a starseed, that just deeply resonates with me, but I don't know anything more about that than that. It's just, I know that the truth.
I feel like in talking to you, the whole time I'm sitting here and I'm being like, she's Andromedan and she's another Andromedan sister. I'm certain that you are Andromedan and that you also have some Lyran aspect as well, but chiefly the most forward energy that I sense is Andromedan, and that you probably work with the Andromedan Lyran Stargate.
And I don't know what that means, but I will look it up. Can you point me somewhere?
I don't know, because I deliberately don't look up anybody else's work around it so that I can just relay the information that I get. But I think that a couple people, somebody that I used to listen to a long time ago, and we had some overlap, was a woman named Activation Vibration. She's on Instagram and YouTube. And then Debbie Solaris, I think, has some information about it. But I also, on my YouTube channel, I just recently did a Galactic Gateway free masterclass. And I know I talked about the Lyran, but I think I ran out of time because I had somebody booked for a podcast. And so I ran out of time and I talked about the Andromedans the next day, which was the paid portion. But anyway, the Andromedan energy feels to me like a very high level. I think the creator beings of this realm are the Andromedans, the Mantids, and the Zetas in particular. But everybody else has a hand in it as well. But I think they're stirring the magic cauldron of the universe. And the Andromedans feel like it's a whole entire galaxy. It's our sister galaxy. So our Milky Way to me feels masculine and feels like it is ruled in a sense by the Arcturians, and they hold the divine masculine frequency. And the Andromedan is like the twin galaxy to this one, and it is the divine feminine counterpart. And so Andromedan beings to me feel like they're here bringing a very ancient and high level of wisdom and DNA understanding, light code understanding, and creatorship to activate human consciousness.
What was the part, Amy, that you said after the Andromedan that I am here? What did you say about the gateway?
To I think you work with the Andromedan Lyran Stargate. So it's like one of the access points between the Andromedan galaxy and our galaxy. There are these two corridors that I know of, but there might be more. One of them is a Sirian Andromedan Stargate, and one of them is the Lyran Andromedan Stargate. And so it's like certain energy comes from Andromeda through the Lyran constellation into our galaxy.
Yeah. Are you able to, if you don't include this in the podcast, are you able to send me this little bit of information?
And I will include it in the podcast.
Okay. So new to me. Thank you.
Yeah. So when I guess also what it means, like that Stargate, what it essentially means is I also believe that we're moving into a period. I don't know when it's going to materialize. I have no idea. I just feel like there's no way to actually describe and understand time because it functions differently than we perceive it to function. But we're moving into a time where there is going to be like pretty frequent contact. It won't be anything like we see in sci-fi movies. I don't think they're going to be physical beings. They're going to be light beings that like phase in and out of this realm that we're in. And so I imagine if you're a Stargate worker, keeper, kind of the way that we can be like Earth grid workers too. It's the maintenance and the guarding and the opening and the closing of stargates that allow Andromeda and Lyran beings to, and then anything else that sort of matches that frequency to come through from other realms into this realm, if that makes sense.
I had no idea that this is the direction I was heading in, honestly, like when I picked up your book. It's really beautiful. It's really, there's no limit. If there is no limit.
There really is no limit. Yeah. And it's a lot to get our minds around.
And sometimes I do and sometimes I don't. Sometimes I just, instead I just be, and not in an ignorant way or in an ignoring way, but just to enjoy the journey and just to trust. And for me not to feel like I need to know everything now.
Yeah, I just think that's a beautiful way of approaching it. And like we don't, our mind thinks it needs to understand everything, but actually it doesn't. It doesn't need to understand. And if you don't mind me asking as my last question before I let you go, which priestess archetype or archetypes from Transmission 8 really resonate with you?
So for sure, the Earth. For sure, the Earth. I don't know if I'm using the right word, but that's on Earth lineage, is that we were raised to heal with herbs. And I just deeply resonate with that. And I want to tell you like a quick story about that. In 2020, when I went into deep meditation, a few years ago, I had been diagnosed with autoimmune that I had resolved, put into remission, whatever terminology you want to use. But I was on a bunch of supplements that were just not resonating with me. And it was when I went into that deep meditation that really I was called to just pull my power back, trust my own intuition, and to get all of those supplements, which obviously, full disclaimer, I don't recommend for anybody else unless we each have our own journey and please do what you feel is best for you. But it was the right decision for me. And I was deeply called to start working with single herbs again. And it's just worked beautifully for me. And I have since then healed some deep wounding that I had around that, where I had to really do inner child work to heal. And I created a beautiful herbal library within, one for my family at home. And I've been sharing that with the women I teach as well. So definitely that, and definitely is water. Is that one of the priestesses is water? Yeah, yeah, that's definitely my other one. And I feel like bits of the other ones, but those are the two that I resonate with the most. And also just this deep, all the priestess archetypes, they're slipping my mind right now, but I know for sure that I don't fully understand it, but just this need to tend fire. And it doesn't make sense, but it probably does to you. But just to tend fire, I feel like I just want to go and tend fire, have a campfire outside, take my family camping just so we can tend a fire. I have a fire table.
Tending fire. Yeah, that's so beautiful. I just think that elemental work is so powerful and so beautiful. Yeah, a priestess keeping the fire, priestess fire keeper.
Yeah.
Love it. Dagmara, thank you so much for this beautiful conversation. It was just like, this is my first call for the day, and I just feel like I'm going to float on air for the whole rest of the day.
Thank you. Will you share with your audience where they can find me, my website and my Instagram?
Please, absolutely. Thank you for reminding me. Please tell us. It'll be in the show notes, but please just tell us.
It's super simple. It's Thrive. So it's, instead of an E at the end, it's an S. So THRIVS. So the website's www.thrivs.com. and Instagram. It's the same, thrivs.com, or you can find me on Facebook under Digmara Gomez.
Thank you so much, Digmara. And for everybody listening, if you're subscribed to the Patreon, Digmara has really generously contributed a meditation, a set of 4 meditations for us to enjoy and use for our expansion and ascension and awakening. So lucky us. Let's go over to the Patreon. Thank you so much for sharing your beautiful wisdom and your energy and your perspective and your stories. It was a beautiful conversation.
I agree. Thank you so much for the time. I really appreciate you, and I'm so grateful for you, Amy.
And beautiful listeners, thank you as always for the powerful, potent currency of your attention. I hope that you go out into the world and create something beautiful today as an expression of your authentic soul frequency. Have a beautiful day or night wherever you are, and I will catch you on the next episode of Soul Man.
Thank you so much for being here with me on this episode. I appreciate you more than my words could ever say. Please remember to rate, review, subscribe, and share, and I will catch you on the next episode.